Las Vegas.
It's so much more than just a city.
It's a feeling. It's that feeling of excitement when you spot the lights of the Strip out the airplane window.
It's that feeling of awe as you stroll down the boulevard, taking in the sights and sounds.
And it's that feeling of satisfaction, knowing that you're in the greatest city in the world.
Tens of millions of people share that feeling every year.
And I'm just one of them, here to take you to the world-famous Vegas Strip
and beyond.
My name is Jeff, and this is Jeff Does Vegas. Welcome to another special bonus episode of Jeff Does Vegas. Now that I'm 5+ years into doing this podcast, with over 200 episodes under my belt, including bonus and special episodes, I've come to the realization that in the early days of the podcast, I covered a lot of cool topics that people might not be aware of. Most of these episodes are buried deep in the archives, and the chances of new listeners discovering them are almost nil. So to save everyone having to go searching for them, I thought I'd go ahead and do the digging for you with a feature I'm calling From the Vault, where I reshare what I consider to be some of the best content from the early days of the podcast. This time around, we're getting sage advice for the Vegas rookies. Las Vegas attracts tens of millions of visitors every year from all over the world, and a good number of those people are making their first ever trip to the city. Las Vegas is one of those places that can be totally overwhelming for a first-timer. But don't worry, your friends will help you out with suggestions on where to stay, where to eat, what shows to check out, and which attractions to visit. What they probably won't tell you are all the things they did wrong on their trips. Mistakes that can literally make or break a Vegas vacation. To do that, I enlisted the help of an expert. Way back on episode number 16 of the podcast, I was joined by David DeMont Mullen, a 20+ year casino industry veteran who's worked for both on and off strip properties in Las Vegas. He's appeared on multiple TV and radio shows, and he's channeled his expertise into several books, including the bestseller Classic Vegas Mistakes. Please enjoy my conversation with David DeMont Mullen.
I've been working in the gaming industry for over 20 years. I was actually a civil engineer coming out of school and just hated it. Moved out to Arizona. Had my first Vegas trip then and just was like, oh, I love it. I love it so much. Went to school at Arizona State, and one of my professors actually used to work for Harrah's, and he saw my passion for the casino business. And so he got me set up with an internship actually at the Suncoast up in, and it was the first casino in Vegas to go ticket in, ticket out with no coins. So part of that first experience. So from there, worked at a job with Station Casinos, worked at Fiesta Rancho in North Vegas. Moved to Green Valley Ranch. When I moved to Green Valley Ranch, they started filming a reality show. And this was kind of when reality shows just started getting going. So it was from the Discovery Channel. The show was called American Casino. And it was aired right before American Chopper, which was their number one show at the time. And it was basically, they followed about 15 of us, management and directors at Green Valley Ranch, on our daily lives in and outside the casino. And it was mind-boggling. First, just the grueling nature of being filmed every day at work for 17 months straight was tough. It was 31 episodes, and definitely learned a lot about being on a reality show. It was one of the first reality shows actually where it was being aired while it was being filmed. So it was about a 6-month lag from when you could, but you could go to the casino and see it being filmed. It was quite an experience having that. So we'd be being just walking around the casino doing our normal job, and you'd have people coming up to us all the time, asking for autographs, taking pictures. So from there, I was like, how am I going to harness this my newfound mini celebrity status? And I started to write a book called The Las Vegas Little Black Book, and it's a guy's guide to the perfect Vegas weekend. And went out there and sought out publishers, and actually got a publisher out of Boston to sign on for it. Sent one of the initial copies to Colin Cowherd at ESPN, and he went crazy over it. He started talking about it on air all the time, and from there, the book kind of took off. And for a couple years, it was a big hit. It was a big solid hit. And then as time went on, the book came a little bit dated. And every time people would ask me about the book, they always asked me about one of the concepts, which is called classic Vegas mistakes. And they would say, give me more, give me more, give me more. So I said, well, I'm just going to start writing a book, which has all classic Vegas mistakes. And that's where the idea of the book came from. And it's continually being tweaked. You know, it's got a good Twitter now, but I'm eventually going to put out another copy of it, updated copy, and really focus on what's happening lately in Las Vegas.
Because, I mean, I'm sure, you know, again, in all the years that you've been involved in the gaming industry and the casino industry, you've seen a lot of changes. Do you feel like you've seen more change in, say, the last 3 or 4 years than you'd seen in all the years previous to that?
Absolutely. You know, the casino business was one of the kind of the last businesses to really get their hands around the database marketing side of the business. They started out in the early 2000s, started sending out mailers, that sort of stuff. And mail is a huge part of the casino business. And as time evolved and the database marketers got smarter and smarter and smarter, you know, it basically was, you know, if how much you game, how much you play, and how to, you know, basically get every penny out of you. And if you're not a gamer, then we're going to make you pay a premium price with resort fees, with, you know, extra charges to your rooms. And it's kind of taken a turn for the worse for the kind of low roller or a person that doesn't gamble very much or doesn't gamble very often. And I'm a little bit worried about Vegas in general, just because that kind of attitude is kind of really spreading. And a lot of people are, you know, visiting less often, a lot less opportunities to game at tribal casinos or other casinos around the country. So I'm a little worried about it, but there's still millions and millions of people that come to Vegas all the time. You know, 20% of people that come to Vegas, you know, any day is a new visitor, and they're out to have fun, you know. And it's not going to go anywhere. It's only going to get bigger and better as the city continues to grow and, you know, add pro football and all that sort of things.
Do you ever see the resorts rolling back those resort fees? Do you think that's ever going to happen? Or do you think that now, you know, the genie's kind of out of the bottle on that?
Well, what's going to happen is, and you can see it on Expedia already, is they're starting to post what the resort fees are with the cost. And there's actually some Expedia rivals coming out, and you'll be seeing them soon. I'm not sure of the names of them, that include the resort fee into the price when you do the search, right? So right now on Expedia, you kind of have to do manual, add it up, and that sort of thing. Uh-huh. I don't think it's going away. I think they're going to add more value to it. You know, it's kind of like a magic trick right now. You know, it's, you know, you it's, you know, free gym, you know, Wi-Fi, all that sort of stuff. But I would think they would start adding more value to the actual resort fee, as in, you know, free drinks, free access to happy hours, preferred seating at restaurants, other little things, maybe better goodies in the room. Like, you know, I've seen some hotels starting to leave chocolates on the pillows nowadays and that sort of stuff. But I think it's not going to go away. And unfortunately, it's happening all over the place. If you go to just Disney World also, I mean, all the Disney resorts now have resort fees and they have parking fees. They just put parking fees in for self-parking only about 6 months ago. And it's just the way the world's going to work in the hospitality industry.
And I think you're right. I mean, people are definitely, if you go on any of the Facebook Vegas groups that I'm on, the number one complaint is the resort fee. And people look at it as a hidden fee, when in fact, I mean, it is, but it isn't hidden, right? I mean, you know, it's kind of right up there with the airlines that say it's going to cost you X amount of money, but if you want to check a bag, we're going to charge you this. If you want to select a seat, we're going to charge you this, and so on and so forth. But I think you're right. It's that perceived value on those resort fees. Is there, and I guess the other number one question that people ask when it comes to that is there a way to get them waived?
Well, you're starting to see a lot of bundling, like offer packages out there that says, you know, $100 room, includes resort fee and a couple other things. You know, it's so much money nowadays. So if you think about it from a marketing side, right? So, you know, let's say I'm marketing a resort on the casino strip. You know, one of the things I have to fight as a marketer is the bad blood that I'm creating with the resort fees. But if I'm getting an extra $10 million a year to market, uh-huh. As a marketer, I feel I can overcome that bad feeling with that $10 million extra dollars. going into, you know, marketing. And then the player development guys always have the ability to waive the resort fees, right? The casino host, that sort of stuff, right? It's a little harder sometimes on the strip where it's a little bit more corporate. But if you go to, you know, your regional casinos, tribal casinos, you know, they'll waive the resort fee really quick. It's really where it all started was with the convention business, uh-huh. right? So they were thinking, what's another way we can get money out of the conventioneers? And it was with these resort fees that when they're paying with their business account, they didn't really care that much, right? And then once they started seeing how much money kind of flowed into it, it kind of just went over into the transient side of the business. And now it's kind of going into the comp side of the business where you get a comp room, but you got to pay for the resort fee. Uh-huh. But it's just another way of discounting. So, you know, if you play enough, you'll get it waived. But it's going to be a cat and mouse game for a long time.
Well, and then the question becomes, too, is how much is enough to actually get it waived? I know for me personally, I'm not a big gambler. I'm a big night on the slots for me is a couple $100s, right? Like I'm not dropping thousands of dollars over hours. So the way I look at it is, you know, how much am I going to have to spend to actually get those resort fees waived? Is it going to be, you know, five times the actual amount of just sucking it up and paying the resort fees?
Right. I mean, it'll eventually be able to, you know, how you earn like comp dollars when you play, you'll be able to use your comp dollars to pay for the resort fees. But it's also, you know, a big part of being a casino patron is what you call it human engineering, right? You got to build relationships with the staff, right? Casino hosts are big. Hotel managers are big. Also, like your players club supervisors and managers, they have a lot more power than a lot of people think about it. A lot of those people, once you kind of establish a relationship with them, they're willing to do stuff for you that kind of, you know, isn't the exact rule, but they can get stuff waived for you. So that's one of my kind of biggest tips is you got to be friendly. You got to reach out. You got to always say hi to people and try to build that relationship over time with each visit.
So coming back to the original, we went off on a big tangent, but that's OK. I'm totally OK with that. I love hearing insiders' thoughts on all of this kind of stuff because it's fascinating and it is information that people kind of want to know. Coming back to our original intention of discussion with Classic Vegas Mistakes, I kind of stumbled across the Twitter account for Classic Vegas Mistakes. And I got to say, I love some of the stuff that's on there because I in reading it, I see a lot of myself and some of my early trips to Las Vegas on there in some of the mistakes that I've made. And over the course of the last few years of making regular trips, I've kind of learned, you know, how to avoid that stuff. In all your time in the business, like you said, you started putting this together. What were some of the most, and what are, I guess, some of the most common mistakes that people make when they go to Las Vegas?
The first one is your group that you're going to travel to Vegas with, right? Can't have too few, can't have less than three, can't have too many, can't have more than eight. If you go either kind of way, that becomes difficult. But also, if you want to invite people that are in the same kind of similar financial status with you, and the same sort of kind of attitude with you, right? One person can bring down a Vegas vacation pretty quick. I've been on groups where I was with a super rich guy and he was buying bottles at the tables and, you know, he wanted us to split the fee and we're like, you know, broke, to inviting a guy that just broke up with his girlfriend. And the whole time he's, you know, drunk dialing her and crying and all this sort of stuff and just kind of just ruins the whole trip. So your invite group, the first thing you got to think about. One of the big things also is don't invite yourself on somebody else's group, right? People go, oh, I'm going to Vegas next week. They're like, okay, I'm going to go too. Can I just crash in your room? Right? Horrible mistake, right? Unless somebody asks, hey, join us in Vegas, don't jump on their trip with them, right? Number two would be your hotel choice. You know, a lot of people think they're not going to spend any time in their hotel. They go, oh yeah, just whatever, I'm just going to be sleeping in there a couple hours a night, I'm gonna be partying on the strip and gambling. Your hotel serves as kind of your center home base to your whole Vegas adventure, right? You spend a lot more time in there than you think. You know, you start your mornings there, you probably have your first meal there, you probably have your last meal there. You're the center bar of the hotel you're staying at serves as the kind of the meeting area for your group, right? And it's kind of your de facto place. Yes, you'll be traveling to other hotels during that thing, but when you start going, hey, am I going to take a drive, you know, get an Uber or take a taxi, or am I going to start walking? you really got to think of proximity of the hotel you're staying at to where your area is going to be, right? So those two are kind of the first ones when you're planning out something to really think about when you think about classic Vegas mistakes.
It's funny that you talk about group size, because I've done a couple of different trips. I did a trip with a buddy of mine, just the two of us, which amazingly enough actually went pretty well. I was down for a conference, and he, you know, I asked him, hey, do you want to come down with me? He'd never been before. And it worked out well because we spent a fair bit of time apart. I was off at the conference stuff during the day, and he was off doing his thing during the day. And then at night we, you know, connected back up together and hung out, which worked out really well. But I've also done the group dynamic, and as you said, it is very important to get that dynamic right. In the group that I was in, we did have that one guy who was the Debbie Downer of the group, right? He was the one that you know, he didn't want to do anything that anybody else wanted to do. He complained about money the whole time. He made the classic mistake, particularly when you're Canadian like us and you got to be trying to bring US cash, of not getting his money ahead of time. So he was hitting up ATMs while he was down there, and of course then complaining about the amount of money that he was spending on ATM fees. The group was like eight of us, so, you know, trying to herd cats to get anybody together to do anything. So I absolutely get the group dynamic and trying to find that absolutely perfect group of people to do a trip to Vegas with.
Right. Yeah, it just doesn't happen by chance. You really got to think about it, right? So I mean, I've had people, you know, just all of a sudden disappear. They get lost, and then they decide they want to go home. They don't tell anybody, and you're just like, where are they? You know, it's important on your group. You know, they can make and break the whole trip. Once you kind of have that planning set in stage about your group and your hotel choice, the next is to have some sort of plan, right? Some sort of plan that, you know, you go to your people and say, hey, this night we're going to do this. You know, we're going to do a show on this night. We're going to, you know, try to hit up this place and try to get some understanding of what the plan is going to be. It doesn't mean that you have to follow that plan to the T, but if you don't have a plan, what it's going to happen is something I call the group wander. The group wander is when the group gets together and they just start wandering around the hotels in the strip, kind of figuring out what they want to do. And it's, you're traveling in a group, so maybe one person eyes something. They're like, oh, should we go over to that restaurant? But, you know, you're not getting the vibe of that you want to recommend that to the group. So you just kind of keep walking around. It's kind of the worst thing that can happen. And in my early trips to Vegas before I started working in the business, I had a lot of those group wanders, and I vowed to myself, you know, never do that again.
Again, another one that you're hitting that I've been the victim of on the one of the group trips that we did, we ended up down on Fremont Street. And we did do the group wander, and it was a nightmare. It was just, you know, oh, well, let's stroll into here and stroll over there and stroll there. Like, again, no plan of action, no idea. It was, the plan literally was let's grab a limo and go to Fremont Street. That was right. It. We had no idea what we were going to do once we got there, and it showed horribly once we were there. So that's an excellent tip and an excellent point to avoid.
Right. Happens all the time. Another big one is what you're doing on each day in Vegas. So I kind of have this rule. It's day one, the arrival day, is kind of your partying day, right? It's a quick meal. It's go out, use that energy you have coming off the, you know, either driving into Vegas or coming off the plane, and use that energy and build up a fun night. Now, the key also with a big mistake that people always make is going way too hard on night one, right? They stay up until 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. They're completely trashed. They end up sleeping out the whole next day away. They wake up at 7, 8 o'clock at night on day two, missed out on the pool, missed out on the fun stuff during the daytime. And then just kind of get into this kind of drinking again. And then day three, they're just completely toast. So don't go too hard on day one. So I always say day one's kind of for partying. Day two is for bonding. So bonding, as I mean, is you're doing fun stuff together. That's when you have your big meal together, you know, your signature meal for the whole trip. And that's actually when you do a show. You know, it can be a comedy show. It can be Cirque. It can be, you know, abstinence. It just needs to be something where it's like you're doing stuff as a group, right? You don't want to have just two straight days of partying, or it's kind of feel like you're doing the same thing over and over again. You want to be able to look back on the trip and go, oh man, that first night was so fun. The next night we did this, right? And then finally, day three is all about relaxation and rejuvenation, right? This is the day that you go to the spa. This is the day that you just, you know, get some room service, hang out by the pool for a little bit. You don't go too crazy on your last day. And personally, I don't recommend going more than two nights in Vegas, but you can stretch it out. But what ends up happening is you end up start doing either the partying night or the bonding night for a second or third time. And you really don't need that to have a memorable Vegas experience.
And it's interesting that you mention about, you know, more than two nights. I'm a three night guy. For me, I come down from Calgary. So I'm, you know, it's a 2.5 hour flight for me to get down. So it's not a horrible length of time for me to come. There's a lot of folks, of course, that come from overseas, come from far away, and they're spending 5, 6, 7, 10 days in Las Vegas. And I can't even imagine. Like, for me, by the end of, by day number three, I'm done. Like, I'm finished with the people. I'm finished with the crowds, the noise, everything. Of course, as I'm sitting at the airport ready to get on my flight, I'm already starting to look at my calendar to plan out when I can make my next trip. But I just can't imagine spending that much time in Las Vegas. Like, it's just too much.
Absolutely. When I see these overseas people say we're staying here for 10 nights, I mean, you're literally miserable by day four, day five, right? Now, you can sprinkle in a trip to the Grand Canyon. You could do some other stuff. But if you're planning that big of a trip, you got to focus on going to a couple other areas, right? As in, like, go somewhere and go hit Napa for a couple of days, or hit Phoenix for a couple of days before or after, right? You never want to spend that many days in Vegas, or you'll just be so sick of it you won't want to come back anytime soon.
What are some of the mistakes people make when it comes to shows? Because I know nothing drives me a little more nuts than seeing people, and you're probably going to hit it with this, seeing people pay full price for things in Las Vegas.
Yeah, so I mean, it takes a lot of planning. First, you got to hit up every Vegas connection you have, right? If you've got friends that work in the industry, they always have the hookups. One of the best parts about working in a casino is you have the power to hook up other people to do stuff, right? But you got to look for the deals, right? And also, in every show, you know, you don't have to sit in the premium seats, right? A lot of these shows, theaters are pretty good that, you know, you don't have to have the $250 seat. You can have the $95 seat, which is a little bit higher, but it's not, they're built for the whole audience. But it's also like a couple things on shows is, first, nobody wants to see, you know, don't waste your time with like magic cats, you know, that sort of weird type. There's a lot of those daytime shows at like 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock, just kind of thrown in there, weird areas, like avoid those. Right. I would say if you've never been to a Cirque show, you've got to go to one in your whole life. Right. Mm-hmm. That's a big part. But also, it's when you go to the show. So you should be going your second day. And I always recommend going to the early show and eating later versus eating and then going to the late show, right? Now, you know, when you think of early shows, late shows, you're like, early show, like, you know, that's going to, you know, get into my gambling time. But the other way is you have this huge dinner, drinking wine, eating steak, and then you go sit in a Cirque theater in the pitch black for 2 hours. I've seen more people sleep during these shows than I could ever imagine, just because they didn't really plan it out. And in addition, once your group leaves that show and they've been kind of sleeping kind of through it, they're done for the night. They don't want to do anything. They kind of wander back, maybe play a little bit. But if you do, you go dinner, show, show, then dinner, then you transition into some fun stuff afterwards, right? So it really kind of extends that second night.
Well, and the other thing too, like you mentioned about early shows, the shows in Vegas, for the most part, any of the big production shows, most of them don't run more than 90 minutes, because they you know, they don't want you sitting in a show for 2.5 hours. They want you out on the casino floor spending money. So, you know, if you hit up a show that's 7:30, you're done by 9 o'clock and you're out of that theater by 9:05, back out onto a casino floor.
Right. Absolutely. Right. So, yeah, nothing's too long, right? I mean, I think one of the biggest mistakes is people don't go to a show, right? Like, it's part of the Vegas experience, right? You know, it just started with like Wayne Newton and, you know, and started with, you know, Frank Sinatra. It's like, it's all about the entertainment, right? And so shows are like huge tentpole experiences for a trip. So, you know, when you get back home from Vegas, people are going to ask, hey, what'd you do, right? If you just said you just walked on the strip and drank and gambled the whole time, that's kind of a boring story, right? But you said you went to the show, you know, it was awesome. You definitely got to see it. you know, kind of puts that whole vacation and makes it kind of sums it up as a better experience.
Any classic Vegas mistakes people tend to make when it comes to restaurants and meals?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So if you have a big group, it's tough to get that seated. Right. So what's ended up happening sometimes, you walk in and it's like, you know, there's eight of you. So a lot of these big steakhouses, they have their main dining room, and then they have this like secondary private party room, which is like they rent out and, you know, they feed a bunch of people. So what ends up happening, they usually throw big groups into that private dining area. So there's like four or five groups of eight, and you feel like you're in a banquet room. You're not even in the restaurant. So you're kind of losing that experience. So there's only so few places that you can eat in a big group. So when you got to make reservations ahead of time, and you actually have to talk to somebody and say, are we going to be sitting in the main dining room? I'm trying to make that a big point. I like to make the dinners just kind of go fast a little bit, like never get appetizers to share in a group of eight, right? You know, they come out and, you know, some are three, some are five, you're passing them around the table. Some people don't get any. Like, you should really just start ordering your drink and your food immediately. I even say skip the salad, just go straight for your main dish and your side dish, and then skip dessert afterwards. Because you're really there for the experience. Like, you're not at home having a meal, you know, that's your Easter supper, right? You're in Vegas. Part of the experience is going to one of these cool restaurants. And so after an hour, you have that experience. So there's no reason to make it into a two-hour meal in my mind.
Do you have any advice as far as, you know, nightclubs setting things up? Should people do bottle service? Is it worth, you know, sliding the bouncer a few bucks to try and sneak in? Or should you talk to those dudes on the street? Any advice there?
Sure. So those are great questions, because this happens to a lot of people, right? So the first thing, the kind of big mistake about getting a table and getting bottle service is, first, if you just want to go there for a little bit, you've already spent so much money, so you're going to be staying there for hours, right? Mm-hmm. And then also, you're kind of stuck to your table, right? You don't venture that far out, right? So you're kind of sitting at your table, you know, you're kind of, you know, watching people, that sort of stuff. I personally prefer just kind of fighting my way to the front of the line, right? Reading the name of the bouncer off his name tag, right? Mm-hmm. And depending on how busy it is, you have to slip him some money. But you introduce yourself, hey, David, you know, and then you shake your hand, you have a 20 in there, but if it's a really, you know, popular place, $100 bill, say, I got six people, can you get us in? And that's the way those guys make their money. They have no loyalty to the actual place they work at. They're all out for themselves. So they'll definitely get you in. There's a couple other places and that have back doors, that have bouncers. And kind of one of the secret things is trying to find that back door. And tipping that bouncer lets you in the back door, right? Again, these guys don't care. They just want to make money, right? But, you know, some people spend the entire day trying to get on the guest list for a nightclub. You know, they call the promoters, they call the places, they go to it early, they put their names on the list. But when you get there, it's a mass of people, and it's any name on any list isn't going to work out, right? So unless somebody's buying a table for you and you're stopping by, I directly don't recommend getting a table, right? You know, you could do it every once in your life, but in Vegas, you don't want to be caught in one place for 3 or 4 hours. You want to, you know, hit it, have fun, get that experience, and then get out and do something else.
And the dudes walking along the street that are like, hey, you want to go to a nightclub tonight? And I always see people stopping and signing up and giving over their info, and yeah, just text me and I'll make sure you get in. Are those guys legit, or are they just screwing you over?
Pretty much screwing you over, right? So they're just, you know, they're legit as in they're promoters for the nightclubs. Mm-hmm. So basically what happens, like, let's say you get one of those cards and you show that card to the bouncer or when you're paying to get in the nightclub, that promoter gets credit for bringing you in, and then gets a fee for however many of those cards get in there, right? So you'll see if you just walk through a resort, you'll see people putting wristbands on you for a club, right? And you think it's like, oh, this is automatically going to get me in. But when you go up there, you're just, you know, everybody's got a wristband on, and you're still stuck behind this massive crowd trying to get in.
Right. Right.
So I would say, you know, don't waste your time. Now, if you are going to go, I would say, you know, kind of go early in the night. you know, late at night, it kind of gets a little sloppy around the clubs, right? I personally like the, like the late dinner into the nightclub experience. But you, I think you need to do it once on your trip to Vegas, or at least every other time you go.
Now, for a second, let's talk timeshare, people. The biggest lesson, the thing that I learned, and this was, and I'm lucky that I've never fallen for this, but I know so many people that have. Walking down the street, hey, do you want a couple of free tickets to a show? Inevitably, that person walking down the street in front of you gets pulled aside, gets sucked in, and because they think they're getting free tickets to a show. The biggest thing that I've learned in all my times going down to Vegas is nothing is free in Vegas. Am I right in that?
You are correct. So when I first moved to Vegas, I lived at the Jockey Club, which is, well, they built, Cosmopolitan's built in the parking lot of it, and then mm-hmm. its faces the Bellagio. And it was one of the few apartments in there that hadn't been sold to the timeshare company. So when I used to leave for work every day, I literally would see these people being just hoarded in from being spotted the night before and getting kind of, you know, scammed into visiting these places. And I used to hear and listen to all the sales pitches as I walk by. And don't get me wrong, if the people that sell timeshares are some of the best salesmen in the business. Uh-huh. They're trained. They know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly to look for. And most people that end up getting part of those things end up committing something monetary wise. And it's a tough thing to get out of there. They're very, very smart in what they do, and they've been really trained on it. And they know every kind of blowback you can get. So I would avoid every timeshare no matter what, right? Don't take anything for free. Because even if you do say, okay, I'm going to get these two tickets for free, but I got to listen to this 4-hour sales pitch. I mean, that's 4 hours of your day that's just going to be horrible, right?
Exactly, yeah.
I might turn it 6-8 hours. You never know. And it's just not what you want to do, right? You know, everybody that I know that has bought a timeshare in, you know, they'll defend their purchase of it, but I know in the back of their mind that they never wanted to do it.
Well, there's a reason that there are 857 different websites that all offer you ways to get out of your timeshare, or, you know, sales websites. And if you do go on any of those sales websites, there's people that are literally selling their timeshare for a dollar just so that they can get the hell out of it, right?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the big industry nowadays is all these lawyers that are working to get people out of their timeshares, and it's tough. It's a lifelong contract.
And the other thing too is, I mean, the tickets that they're giving for free, they're not headlining, you know, Celine Dion, Elton John, Cher, Lady Gaga tickets, are they?
No, it's like the Gordy Browns of the world, the Mac Kings of the world, right? It shows that have the space that they can just get them in. There's enough space. It'll never be sold out, that sort of thing.
Any other big classic Vegas mistakes that you want to try to help people avoid?
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the things is gambling, right? So, and in the book, there's a lot of stuff about mistakes that people make when they're gambling, right? And just knowing those mistakes first saves a lot of embarrassment, right? Is, you know, where to place a double down on blackjack. You know, if you're betting with a $25 chip and a $5 chip, making sure the $5 chip's on top, right? But some of the big things I see is, you know, people making these huge bets. So they come up to blackjack, they got $300, they put $300 down, right? Then all of a sudden they get two aces, right? So they got a split, but they don't have the $300 to split, right? So, you know, they can run to the ATM and the pit boss is, you know, and the dealer is going to be trying to get them not to do that because it's going to slow down the whole group, or they try to borrow money from somebody else sitting there. Inevitably, what's going to happen, they're going to have to hit on the two, right? And they you know, have a horrible hand. Wow, they could have had one of the best hands if they had money to split. So never bet all the money you can on that you have is on one hand. Right? Make sure you have it. I would say don't leave a casino with chips from that casino, right, and thinking you're going to go back. While you might have plans to go back, there's a good chance that you won't go back. Just take the time, go to the cage, get the cash for it. And then I would say gamble, you know, if you think about your best times gambling, right? And I think about, you know, my top 10, every single one of them was when I had my friends at the table, a great dealer, right? And it was just like this fun couple hours experience that we're winning or losing. We're just having a great time, right? you can only really get those experiences during the daytime in Vegas, right? At night, you know, it's tough to get a group of people on one table, right? So I would say do more daytime gambling than nighttime gambling. It's not fun to sit there and have one person in your group play blackjack while the other three people are kind of watching from behind. That's just, you know, that's not fun at all, right? So more daytime gambling, less nighttime busy gambling. If you have a dealer that is in any way rude or smart aleck or just not fun to play with, just leave immediately. There's other dealers out there that can change your entire experience, right? Other than that, you know, there's lots of other ones in the book. You know, Joy, we can just go to Twitter and kind of look at different ones on there. But I always think of new ones all the time. I see things happen all the time, right? You'd be surprised about how many times people leave money on the table and walk away, didn't realize they won the last bet, or their chips slide underneath the leather part of the table, mm-hmm. right? And so they there's a missing $100 chip. They don't know where it went, and they leave, and later on the dealer finds it underneath the table. That sort of stuff happens all the time, and it amazes me.
So if people want to get their hands on the book, David, they can do that. It's on Amazon?
Right, Amazon Prime, $15.99. Or if you have Kindle Unlimited, it's free on Kindle Unlimited. It's really good for if you're bringing somebody to Vegas who's never been there before, for them to read it, right? And it's a great one to hand to them on a plane. Like, hey, read this on the way. And it's a very captivating book. It's really easy to read because it's all broken down into different mistakes. It will save your group tons of time, make it so much better of an experience if a newbie to Vegas reads this and at least takes in some of it, right? This book is really written for somebody that's kind of newer to Vegas, that or somebody that's been to Vegas and just had a horrible time. You see that stuff all the time. And you know, right there, hey, this is the way to do it. You know, this is you gotta understand how it flows, you gotta understand how everything works. Otherwise, they're not gonna like it, they're never gonna want to go back.
The book is Classic Vegas Mistakes. David, thank you so much for taking the time today to jump on and chat. I really appreciate it, and I know my listeners are gonna appreciate it as well.
Yeah, absolutely, pleasure to do it.
And that wraps up another episode of Jeff Does Vegas. If you've got feedback on this episode of the show, or any other episode for that matter, or you've got suggestions and ideas for topics you'd like me to cover on the podcast, please feel free to reach out via social media on Facebook, X, or Instagram at Jeff Does Vegas. You can also email me directly at jeff@jeffdoesvegas.com. In the meantime, thanks for checking out the show. Be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts so you'll be notified the instant a new episode is released. While you're there, go ahead and rate us and write a review. And don't forget to visit jeffdoesvegas.com for past episodes, show notes, Vegas deals, and more. My name is Jeff, and this has been Jeff Does Vegas, a Walker New Media production.